The Cat and the Mouse. William's signal failure as a student of science was not due to any lack of interest. It was due to excess of zeal rather than to lack of zeal. William liked to experiment. He liked to experiment with his experiments. He liked to put in one or two extra things and see what happened. He liked to heat things when he was not told to heat them, just to see what happened. And strange things happened. On several occasions, William was deprived of his eyebrows and front hair. William, in this condition, felt proud of himself. He felt that everyone who saw him must imagine him to be the hero of some desperate adventure. He'd cultivated a stern frown with his hairless eyebrows. Old Stinks, the science master, rather liked William. He kept him in for hours in the lab after school, washing up innumerable test tubes and cleaning the benches as atonement for his unauthorized experiments. But he would generally stay there himself as well, smoking by the fire and drawing from William his views on life in general. On more than one occasion, he gravely accepted from William the peace offering of a licorice stick. In spite of William's really well-meant efforts, Old Stinks generally had to rewash all the test tubes and other implements when William had gone. Occasionally, he invited William to tea and sat fascinated at the sight of the vast amount of nourishment that William's frame seemed able to assimilate. But this term, Old Stinks, having foolishly contracted scarlet fever on the last day of the holidays, was absent, and his place was taken by Mr. Evelyn Courtenay, an elegant man with spats, very sleek hair, and a microscopic moustache. From the moment he first saw him, William felt that Mr. Evelyn Courtenay was the sort of man who would dislike him intensely. His fears were not ill-founded. Mr. Courtenay disliked William's voice, and William's clothes, and William's appearance. He disliked everything about William. It is only fair to add that this dislike was heartily reciprocated by William. William, however, was quite willing to lie low. It was Mr. Courtenay who opened the campaign. He set William 100 lines for overbalancing on his stool in an attempt to regain a piece of his litmus paper that had been taken with felonious intent by one of his classmates. When William expostulated, he increased it to 300. When William, turning back to his desk and encountering a whiff of hydrochloric acid gas of his neighbour's manufacture, sneezed, he increased it to 400. Then came a strange time for William. William had previously escaped scot-free for most of his crimes. Now, to his amazement and indignation, he found himself in the unfamiliar position of a scapegoat. Any disturbance in William's part of the room was visited on William, and quite occasionally William was not guilty of it. Mr. Evelyn Courtenay, having taken a dislike to William, gratified his dislike to the full. Most people considered that this was very good for William, but it was a view that was not shared by William himself. He wrote lines in most of his spare time and made a thorough and systematic study of Mr. Courtenay. Silently, he studied his habits and his mode of life and his character. He did this because he had a vague idea that fate might someday deliver his enemy into his hand. William rarely trusted fate in vain. He gleaned much of his knowledge of the ways of Mr. Courtenay from Eliza, Mr. Courtenay's maid, who occasionally spent the evening with Ellen, the Browns' housemaid.
"His aunt's coming to dine with him tomorrow night," said Eliza one evening.
William, who was whittling sticks in his back garden near the open kitchen door, put his penknife in his pocket and began to listen.
"Oh, yeah, it's going to be a set-out and no mistake," went on Eliza. "From what I makes out, he's expecting of money from her. And, oh my, the fuss! Such a set-out of a dinner and all. I can't abide a man what fusses to the extent he does. And he says the last time she had dinner with him, she seed a mouse and screamed the place down and went off in a huff. So there's got to be mouse traps down in the dining room all night before she comes, as well as all the other fuss."
"Well, I never," said Ellen. William took out his penknife and moved away thoughtfully. The next morning, William had a science lesson. He was still thoughtful. Mr. Evelyn Courtney was jocular and facetious. In the course of a few remarks to the front row, he said, "The feline species is as abhorrent to me as it was to the great Napoleon. Contact with it destroys my nerve entirely."
"What's he mean?" whispered William to his neighbour.
"He means he don't like cats," said William's neighbour.
"Well, why don't he say so then?" said William scornfully. Someone near William dropped a test tube.
Mr. Courtney turned his languid eye upon William.
100 lines, Brian," he said pleasantly.
"It wasn't me what did it, sir,"
said William indignantly.
200, said Mr. Courtney.
"Well,"
gasped William in outraged innocence.
400,
said Mr. Courtney.
William was too infuriated to reply. He angrily mixed two liquids from the nearest bottles and heated them over his Bunsen burner to relieve his feelings.
There was a loud report. William blinked and wiped something warm off his face. His hand was bleeding from the broken glass. Mr. Courtney watched from a distance.
600, he said, as William took a bit of test tube from his hair. "And to be done before Saturday, please."
"Don't do 'em,"
said Ginger, as he walked homeward with William.
"Oh, yes," said William bitterly, "and that means go to the head, and you know what that means."
"Well, Douglas and Henry and me all help," said Ginger.
William's countenance softened, then became sphinx-like. He said, "I've thought of a better plan than that, but thanks all the same." That evening, William walked slowly down the road. One hand was in his pocket. The other held a covered basket. He approached, with a stern frown and many cautious glances around him, the house of Mr. Evelyn Courtney. He entered the back gate warily. His entry did not suggest the welcome guest. There was something distinctly furtive about it. He made his way round to the house by the wall behind the bushes. He peeped in at the dining-room window. The perspiring Eliza was engaged in putting the last touches to the dining-table. He peeped into the drawing-room window. There sat Mr. Evelyn Courtney, in the most elegant of elegant dress suits, engaged in the process of charming his aunt, Miss Felicia Courtney. Miss Felicia Courtney was elderly and grim, and not very susceptible to charm. But her nephew was doing his best. Through the open window, William could hear plainly.
"Oh, yes, I get on splendidly, Aunt. I'm so fond of children, devoted to them. In some ways, of course, teaching is a waste of my talents, but on the whole..."
It was here that William drew his hand from his pocket and noiselessly deposited something on the floor through the open window. The something scuttled along the floor by the skirting board. William withdrew into the shadows. Suddenly, a piercing scream came from within.
"It's a mouse, Evelyn! Help! Help! Help!"
More screams followed. William peeped in at the window and enjoyed the diverting spectacle of Miss Felicia Courtney standing on a chair, holding up her skirts and screaming, and of Mr. Evelyn Courtney on his knees with the poker in one hand, trying to reach the mouse who had taken refuge beneath a very low sofa. It was at that moment that William took Trouncer from the basket and deposited him through the window and onto the floor. Now, Trouncer, the Brown's cat, though he disliked William intensely, was of a sociable disposition. He found himself in a strange room with a fire upon the hearth. He liked fires. He did not like the basket in which he had just made his journey with William. He did not wish to go in the basket again. He wished to stay in the room. He decided that the best policy was to make up to the occupants of the room in the hopes that they would allow him to sit on the hearthrug in front of the fire. He approached the only occupant he could see. Trouncer may have known that there was a mouse in the room, or he may not. He was not interested. He was a lover of comfort only. He was no mouser.
Mr. Evelyn Courtenay, who was now lying at full length on the floor, trying to look beneath the low sofa, felt suddenly something soft and warm and furry and purring rub itself hard against his face. He sprang up with a yell and leapt upon the grand piano. "The brute!" he screamed. "The brute! It touched me!" The episode seemed to have driven him into a state closely bordering on lunacy. Trouncer purred ingratiatingly at the foot of the grand piano.
"Oh, oh, catch the mouse!"
screamed Miss Felicia Courtenay.
Get down and catch the mouse! I can't while that brute's in the room!"
screamed Mr. Evelyn Courtenay from the grand piano.
I can't, I tell you, I can't bear him! It touched me! You coward! I'm going to faint in a minute! So am I tell you, I can't get down! No, it's looking at me! I shall never forget this, never! You brute! You tyrant! I shan't either! Go away, you nasty beast! Go away!"
At that moment, two things happened. The mouse put its little whiskered head out of its retreat to reconnoitre, and Trouncer, determined to make friends with this new and strange acquaintance, leapt upon the grand piano onto the very top of Mr. Evelyn Courtenay. Two screams rent the air, one a fine soprano, one a fine tenor.
I can see it! Oh, this will kill me!
Get down, you brute! Get down!"
At this critical moment, William entered like a deus ex machina. He swooped down upon the mouse before it realised what was happening, caught it by its tail, and dropped it through the open window. Then he picked up Trouncer and did the same with him. Miss Felicia Courtenay, tearful and trembling, descended from her chair and literally fell upon William's neck.
Oh, you brave boy, you brave boy! What should I have done without you?"
"Well, I happened to see you through the window trying to catch the mouse," said William, looking at her with an inscrutable expression and wide, innocent eyes. "And I didn't want to disturb you by coming in myself, so I just put the cat in, and when I saw that wasn't no good, I just come in myself." Mr. Evelyn Courtenay had descended hastily from his grand piano and was smoothing his hair with both hands and glaring at William.
"Thank the dear little boy, Evelyn,"
said Miss Felicia, giving her nephew a cold glance.
"I don't know what I should have done without his protection. He practically saved my life."
Mr. Evelyn Courtenay glared still more ferociously at William and muttered threateningly,
"A little child rushing in where grown men fear to tread,"
misquoted Miss Felicia sententiously, still beaming fondly at William.
"He must certainly stay to dinner after that."
Mr. Evelyn Courtenay, to his fury, had to provide William with a large meal, to which William did full justice, munching in silence. Except when her remarks demanded an answer, Miss Felicia ignored her nephew and talked with fond and grateful affection to William only. It was William who volunteered the information that her nephew taught him science.
"I hope he's kind to you," said Miss Felicia.
William gave her a pathetic glance, like one who wishes to avoid a dark and painful subject.
"I expect he means to be," he said sadly.
William departed immediately after dinner. He seldom risked an anticlimax. He possessed the artistic instinct. Mr. Evelyn Courtenay accompanied him to the door.
"No need to talk of this, my boy," said Mr. Courtenay with elaborate nonchalance.
William made no answer.
"And no need to do those lines."
"Thank you," said William. "Good night." He walked briskly down the road. He'd enjoyed the evening. Its only drawback was that he could never tell anyone about it. For William, with all his faults, was a sportsman.
But he'd scored. He'd scored. He'd scored.
And old Stinks was coming back next week. Unable to restrain his feelings, William turned head over heels in the road.